Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Lawyer Henderson podcast. Man, I've been seeing y'all in a minute. I have not been seeing y'all in a minute. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Like, share, and subscribe. Like, share, and subscribe to the Lawyer Henderson podcast show. We're on. We've been basically, you know, seeing what's going on around the country. We've been asking, like, what's going around in the country? You know, what's going on? I mean, there's been a lot of stuff, man. We've been seeing black folks being attacked. We've been seeing sisters. In fact, black women being attacked all over the place. Man, black women are being attacked by these white supremacists everywhere, man. I'm seeing a lot of attacks on black women. This is a growing phenomenon from the white supremacists and the Asian male community, you see. But we're going to be talking about why it is only good trouble to fight global white supremacy. Okay? Why is it good trouble? Not that type of John Lewis trouble that we've been hearing about. But fighting global white supremacy and fighting white supremacists, that's the good trouble you should be engaging in. Thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. We do have the phone lines open at 516-418-5867 if you want to speak to the host. See, the good trouble that John Lewis was talking about, you know, when he was talking about the Selma Pettus, Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, he was talking about that good trouble where white people and white police officers and white supremacists to beat his tail. You see, now we as black people, the millennials, the black younger generation, us black folks who are Gen X and all these, we don't believe in the civil rights leaders' ideal of good trouble. Understand? And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. But we're going to also be talking about how these attacks on black women are getting out of control. The white supremacists, police officer, these thugs with badges, they are out of control. And we're going to be basically talking about that today on the Lawyer Henderson podcast. Hit that thumbs up button. Hit that like button. Like, share, subscribe to the channel. The Cash App is also available, $Lawyer Henderson40. Man, I didn't know that Too Short had a daughter, man. He had a daughter at the age of 53. You know what I'm saying? Out of all the time that he'd been talking about playing and being a hustler, being a player, a pimp, all that, he has a daughter. And I didn't know that. You know, 53 years old, you're just not having your first child. Man, that's kind of like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he basically, how he teach her, because, you know, his music have been for a long time, have been, I'm Shorty the Pimp, you know what I'm saying, bitch this and bitch this, and player this and player soul, you see. And that's what the white supremacists, see, they like for us to talk all that janky stuff. That's the reason why they've been basically, you know, wanting to put my channel on standstill. They've been sending me all kinds of community guideline violations. They've been saying I've been violating. They went after one of my videos that I had during the George Floyd. It was a trailer to one of the documentaries I was going to do on George Floyd, Atlanta style. They came back and said that was a violation and community violation. Screwtube, we have a lot of document evidence that the white supremacists, see, they get to say anything on Screwtube that they want to. There's no flagging of them. But for a black person, you niggers, y'all can't be up here talking about certain types of things that is going against white supremacy. You niggers should know better, you see. Man, it was the Southern Poverty Law Center, their website, was announcing that they have given like PPP loans to about 10 white supremacist-ran organizations. And I don't know if they were organizations or they were businesses or whatever, but they have given them money. And the real struggling businesses basically still waiting on the second round. Some of us were still waiting on the second round. And it never came, but they were giving white supremacists these PPP loans. And there's a lot of people who with the white supremacists, they were getting all this money, like I said, to start their business. That's the reason why a lot of jobs are basically looking for people to work, you know, with that and then unemployment and then the evictions then, which we're going to be talking about this week as well. They were able to, you know, they're struggling to find people for work. But I was like, man, they put up the article and announced that some white supremacists were able to get a lot of the money from the PPP loan, situation. And I was like, man, that's kind of crazy because these are white supremacists. But not only that, we have to look at the fact that white supremacists are they're worried now because the whole climate has changed. They're trying to bring us back to trying to conform with what they want, trying to conform us with the old civil rights generation want us to do, and that's talking about praying and leaving everything up to Jesus and marching, and they want us to be in that particular situation, and we're like, hell no, we're not doing that. That's what our parents' generation did, and they got their ass beat with that good trouble stuff like John Lewis. So today we're talking about not really wanting to do the same thing that John Lewis talked about when he talked about good trouble, but we want to expand on that and say that the type of good trouble that John Lewis is talking about, we don't want no part of that. The good trouble that we want is to fight global white supremacy. And that's what good trouble is, if that's what's happening. But Lawyer Henderson, of John Lewis downtown, and what they were talking about is good trouble, how John Lewis talked about good trouble, and blah, 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 this. And they're trying to find a way to bring the millennials back to that civil rights, cowardly generation type phenomenon that is not working. But downtown Atlanta, they got John Lewis, they got Reverend Joseph Lowry, they got all of these civil rights people and painting them as if black people are going to follow that notion. We are not really prepared to go back into submission that the white supremacists and the thugs with badges wanted us to, okay? And now what the white supremacists are doing, they're attacking our women and our children. But we're going to, before we get into that, we're going to start off about what we were going to basically change the attitude of John Lewis's Good Trouble to what is really the good trouble that the young people, the young black folks, the millennials, us who've been raised in hell and attacking white supremacists, these good troubles that we want is to basically fight white supremacy. But I give this, we're going to start off with an article by Brookings Education. It says that get in good trouble. Necessary trouble and redeem the soul of the America. John Lewis made this statement on Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama on March the 1st, 2020, commemorating the tragic events of Bloody Sunday. Bloody Sunday occurred on March the 7th, 1965, as the peaceful protesters were beaten by law enforcement officers for crossing the bridge. Lewis and others like Amelia Bunton Robertson, I hope I said her name right, were beaten so badly that they were hospitalized. The context behind the march is significant. The 600-person civil rights march was actually about police brutality. Jimmie Lee Jackson, a 26-year-old church deacon, was killed by James Bonner Flower, a state trooper in Alabama. This march also occurred a year and a half after the infamous March on Washington, highlighting the little had changed in the lives of black people in America. Bloody Sunday was highlighted in Ava DuVernay's Oscar-nominated Best Picture film, Selma. Musician John Legend and Common won an Oscar for the song Glory. You see, that's the type of thing that we wanted to move away from, that good trouble, because when John Lewis got his tail beat by the state troopers there, that was not good trouble to get in, because every person has a right to protect themselves. So that's the reason why we cannot basically relate to John Lewis getting his ass beat on the Edmund Pettus Bridge or anywhere with good trouble. I'll tell you what good trouble is. My sister always say, well, she used to say, my twin sister used to say, that I go out looking for trouble. If we basically stay to ourselves, don't interact with nobody, trouble is going to find us. The white supremacist is expecting to basically do as much as they can to black people no matter when they interact with us. And while the old civil rights generation is continuing to say, yeah, y'all can beat our children, whatever y'all want to do, go ahead and do it, they're set up in so many ways to talk about that black people should not be defending themselves, even if it's the thugs with badges who basically are attacking us. The article goes on to say from Brookings.edu, that Bloody Sunday is often noted as the pinnacle of Lewis's life. This defining moment encapsulates five things he taught us about getting in good trouble. He talked about there about vote always, never too young to make a difference, speak truth to power, become a rational equity broker, never give up is one of them things. But see, his definition, it's all about nonviolence, like the idealism of what white people gave us in their version of Dr. King on his nonviolence. But as we often told you, to remember, Dr. King said those who are engaged in riots, those are the voice of the unheard. So we try to basically look at those black folks who came after him and who became obsessed with King's philosophy of nonviolence. Projecting good trouble on us is basically escapism to deal with white supremacy. We basically must continue to fight the white supremacists and those people who are standing in our way and talking about, oh, you should be engaging in good trouble. You should let these police officers beat you down. That's good trouble. That's good trouble. No, that's not. Good trouble is us attacking and defending ourselves by any means necessary. It is what Malcolm X describes as in self-defense. It is what Dr. Khalid Muhammad talked about as far as defending ourselves as well. And self-defense, that's good trouble. Good trouble should not be a violence on citizens because police officers have been rogue for a very long time. In fact, we have not really had real police officers or real what they call real law enforcement. Because law enforcement or sheriffs back in the days, back in the 1800s, was elected by the people. You could trust law enforcement officers in the 1800s to a certain level if they were right in your communities and they were birthed right out of your neighborhoods. But then, of course, when white supremacy came along and the Democrats becoming the start, and at that time in the 1800s, started to say that this is a white man's country, brought us a different perspective as to what now that policing is about, that the white supremacist now has changed and turned in their sheets for badges. That would have been back in 10 or 15 years ago that suggested that the Klan should come back. Well, they really haven't left. We've been telling you that here in the black media. So John Lewis's Good Trouble, when he talked there about vote always, in this article he says that your vote matters. Well, if our votes matters, you wouldn't have white supremacists trying to find ways in the state to try to keep you away from voting. And therefore, if you basically have the right to vote, you're talking about having all kinds of, you know, legislation passed that you have to provide your driver's license when they have all of these things already in the system for you to basically, you know, the identification when you fill out the forms that you turn in to the election board or what have you. But when John Lewis talked about that our votes really matters, he said it highlights his life work, equity voting. One major part of the civil rights movement was black people gaining the right to vote. This finally occurred with the Voting Rights Act of 1965, but the Shelby versus Holder Supreme Court decision in 2013 essentially gutted the Voting Rights Act and paved the way of widespread voter suppression and gerrymandering. If that law was really something significant, then how did the governor here of Georgia win when he cut off certain types of elections and voting systems when he was Secretary of State, you see? So people think that, oh, people say, well, you know, your treasurer, it's your duty, your right to vote. Then they got all kinds of laws that you should not vote. And then when you come to the polls, you're getting threatened. And then people are saying, well, forget that. Let's just fight off the white supremacists. And let's basically tell them that we don't give a damn about your voting. What we're going to do is we're going to then start to fight you in these streets, you see. But see, the old, and meanwhile, you have the old civil rights generation. They basically were so cowardly out here. They're talking about voting as if voting is going to be the ends of all, that the this is going to be something that we should say that it's precious to us. And the old civil rights generation, mind you, they basically was really, you know, compromised and was given limited resources and then went and told their children that this is the plan that the white supremacists have. You go to school, you get an education, you go get a degree, and now you're in competition with other people and other races and people who are coming from the south of the border who is getting access to education based upon executive orders. Okay, remember last week we talked about Obama, where we talked there about him in passing that illegal executive order to give illegal immigrants on the DACA the rights to citizenship, you see. So Good Trouble is not only fighting white supremacists, but Good Trouble is also talking and speaking out against institutionalized racism. You see, the white media likes to say, hey, you niggers, y'all can't have no kind of voice when speaking on COVID-19. You niggas are giving out what they describe as misinformation. And what we're going to do is we're going to cut off your news feeds. We're going to suspend you. We're going to have all kinds of community guideline violations against you because you're giving out this information. In other words, white people have these so-called laws that's supposed to protect our Constitution and our rights to free speech. But then when the science community, which is the white supremacists who really run this nation and who's behind closed doors, speak, all of a sudden the so-called Constitution and the rights to free speech and all this get thrown out of the window, you see. So how do all of this tie into Good Trouble? Good Trouble. That's what the fight is about right now. After George Floyd, there were white men who basically agreed that Derek Chauvin had messed it up, that this climate basically, not only with the COVID and all these other things, that he basically woke up a lot of people. And the white supremacists are upset with that. They wanted to be able to hide their racism. They wanted to be able to lie to the grand jury like we saw in Breonna Taylor's case. And they wanted us to stay confused and discombobulated about what our real fight and struggle is all about. Feeding off on this article about, you know, staying in our way, talking about voting rights suppression is another way for them to basically get us to talk about other things other than what we need to get as far as our reparations. Thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. So if we were to talk about reparations, no, that's not Good Trouble. That's not Good Trouble. You know what Good Trouble is? Good Trouble is getting arrested by protesting and civil rights violations and getting beat up by the cops. That's Good Trouble. That's Good Trouble. You see, bragging about getting your tail hooked. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about this con that Sheila Jackson Lee and all these other people engaged in when they went to, when they were in Washington. They all start, you know, doing that same old stuff. You know, they were basically talking about voting suppression and talk about the John Lewis Act or whatever. And, of course, you had Jim Crow Joe Biden, which is the number one white supremacist that basically, you know, Mr. Jim Crow himself, who was not going to at all, he was not going to do nothing. I mean, she was not going to do nothing to talk about our reparations. What they were going to talk about is the fact that they're going to try to move away from the talk about our reparations to talk about this Good Trouble, getting arrested because of the John Lewis's Voting Rights Act. That's good trouble, you see. So they're trying to change the narrative. But see, we in the grassroots, we're still talking about the fact that we want our reparations. But I wanted to play for you this con that Sheila Jackson Lee is now engaging in.
Voting rights demonstration in D.C. on the same day as Democratic Texas legislators who left the state got a congressional hearing. They're all fighting against voting measures that Republicans say actually make it easier to vote while harder to cheat.
I thought the minimal that I could do is have my liberty denied for a period of time, and I was willing to get arrested.
See, that's good trouble. That's good trouble.
Also making the rounds.
Getting arrested because of Voter Rights Act, that's good trouble. Good trouble. These are fools, man. And Sheila Jackson Lee took the conversation off reparation to Voting Rights Act. Folks, if the young millennials, black people, young kids, black folks, are we talking about and worried about voting rights? No, because we know that is nothing. That's nothing for us. We don't care. The young generation do not care about the right to vote because they know that we're not getting anything out of voting. They know that voting is not going to uplift the black community. See, white people still think that just because this older black generation is still around, that we're interested in their version of good trouble, that the civil rights generation is trying to lead the scam, that it is not the fight for black people to have reparations or to have their 40 acres in a mule. What black folks need is this kind of voter rights protection that somehow they cannot basically get despite that there's already all kinds of legislation that is out there to protect our rights to vote. That's not what we're talking about. That's the reason being why when you see Sheila Jackson Lee at this particular situation, it's almost like it was staged, that they went and got some civil rights old women who was dusty and like, you're like, hey, wait a minute. we're not rocking with y'all like that. You know what I mean? We're not rocking with the fact that y'all want us to talk about Voting Rights Act. And that's good trouble. Good trouble. Thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. You see? So they basically was really trying to get us off the map, the our square. They're really trying to say, you know, you niggas need to be participating in trying to, you know, get this particular situation out the way. And that's the way for them to try to then help other minorities, like, you know, you see that they always do. They help other minorities. They go and they'll have to help the Hispanics and the Mexicans. They'll help the LGBT community. See, the Democrats, as we've been telling y'all, have basically, they're not, we don't really now, at this point in time, as the black grassroots, you know we're not rocking with the Democrats. You even got Obama, they tried to put Obama out there, and Obama, you know, tried to sell the soap, and Obama has been washed away. No one is really, you know, rocking with Obama. Black people are not rocking with Obama at all. So good trouble means that, hey, we could basically talk about good trouble, can't we? Can we talk about good trouble? Is Sheila Jackson Lee good trouble? okay? I want to know that if the Voting Rights Act passed, guys, I want to know if the Voting Rights Act passed, if John Lewis's Voting Rights Act passed, I want to know what is that going to do for us as black people? What is the Voting Rights Act going to do for us while they're behind closed doors and they are basically making sure that behind closed doors they are helping all these other immigrants while black people continue to suffer? What is Sheila Jackson Lee's plan for us to get our reparations? The idea here is that this particular stunt that she did at Washington, and to bring these old, raggedy head old women to sing the songs and these chants, like, you know what I'm saying, they do with these civil rights protesting, and I have no problem with that, but this was a stunt, right, that is throwing us off. This is really to undermine black people because they're trying to allow these these foreigners to just cut in line to get things that they basically not entitled to. And while black people are fighting for everybody else's rights, that is these black politicians' personification of foot trouble. We have to understand what they're trying to do here. We have to understand that good trouble is about fighting white supremacy. Good trouble is about making sure that you're protected, equal protection under the law. That's good trouble. And if somebody, even if they wear a badge of gun, violate those rights, then you are there by not only the so-called Constitution, but you have the right because of God to suggest that you can defend yourself and engage in good trouble. You see, the good trouble that John Lewis is talking about, that good trouble is going to get you beat up. It's going to get you murdered, possibly. It's going to get you walking in the hospital and get you to basically think that you have to be a coward in order to live in this society while every other illegal immigrant and everybody else come in and jump over you. That's the good trouble that these black leaders and these civil rights people want us to believe. What is good trouble on y'all watch? What is good trouble when we talk there about folks that is basically undermining black men and women in this country who have fought in every war that this country has had? You understand? Panaki, can you hear me?
Panaki, hello,
can you hear me?
Anderson.
How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, so what do you think about this Voting Rights Act? Do you think that that's what black folks should be working for or working on now?
No, because they don't know what's in it. It's not no suppression of voters. You want people who are legally in the country and can legally vote.
Yeah.
And see, here's the thing. The federal government cannot control states. The Constitution gives the states the right to set the parameters of its voting. Now, of course, you had amendments to the Constitution. And the last one was in 1965, but it didn't have nothing to do with voting. It had, well, I guess you could say it did. It had to do with registration in those states where you had those Jim Crow laws. But blacks have been able to vote since the 15th Amendment way back when. Now, the only thing that was problems was down south in some counties, and that they had these restrictions, or should I say these obstacles, which was really detrimental in keeping them from voting. So the 1965 Voting Rights Act, as far as the registrations is concerned, it, you know, it done away with that, supposedly. But what the Democrats is doing is trying to make it to where illegals can vote. Let me tell you what they're doing with these illegals. They're bringing them in the country, and they're distributing them around the country, putting them on buses and airplanes, and they are inserting them, and I'm saying this, I can't prove it 100%, but I'm saying they are inserting them in areas where they're about to lose Democratic control of a congressional seat. Ooh. Well, see, if you bring illegals and put them, where are you in, Texas?
No, I'm in Atlanta. I'm in Georgia.
Okay, you in Georgia. Let's suppose that a lot of blacks is moving out of Atlanta, and your John Lewis's seat is, let's put this, John Lewis's seat is the 5th District. Right. And you got a lot of, and that's Fulton County, right?
Yeah.
Okay, suppose you got a lot of blacks moving out of Fulton County, which they probably are doing, unless they don't spread the county out further to follow them. That's what they do. And you're about to lose that seat. In other words, it's going to converge into the maybe the 6th district or however. Well, what they do, they bring in illegals and put them in the district. They can't vote, but they can be counted toward a congressional seat.
Ooh.
That was the same thing around the 3/5 compromise. It didn't have anything to do to say that a person was 3/5 of a human being. What it done was said that you counted your slaves for every three, every, let's see, a whole slave, you would have to have, rather than five votes with five slaves, you would only get three. So every five counted as three. And they done that in order to keep the southern states, especially like Mississippi, from having more Congress people representation than the northern states. If they had done that, they would have took over Congress.
Right.
And I put on your face, I put on your Facebook page a copy of Georgia's reform, voting reform, and also Texas. And there's no place in either one of them where it's suppressing people where they can't go vote.
So what you're saying is that the same thing inside the John Lewis's Act as well?
I haven't read John Lewis's Act, but I can imagine that it probably is some of that stuff. And really, you know why the reason why kind of a lot of states are doing reform? Because they haven't seen this absentee, this mail-in voters like they have in 2020.
Okay.
And see what they were doing with them ballots. They were mailing out ballots to everybody in some places, even people that didn't ask for one. That's totally ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep.
And so the Democrats came up with that idea, and they was cheating. That's why come they don't want these forensic audits.
Right.
And now you got the head of the Department of Justice, Garbage, is saying that to audit the election is going against the Civil Rights Act. Well, the election is over. They are auditing the ballot. How is that going against the Civil Rights Act?
Mm.
You see the stuff that they pull? I mean, people
Absolutely.
Went to vote. They don't vote it already. So So how is it going to keep people from voting if they don't vote it already? They're just auditing the ballots to make sure that the integrity exists. And in many cases, you're going to find out that it didn't. Never have seen nothing like that before. That's why they got away with it. And
so
this,
the absentee ballots,
there's people that was going to be out of their district. They've been used before, but you go personally and apply for one. You don't send no ballots in the mail. Anybody can get a ballot in the mail. Like anybody can vote, because all they need to have in some areas is just a utility bill. Well, if you go in somebody's trash can and pull out their utility bill, you can go to the polling station and hand it to them. They look at the bill, find your name. The poll worker will put her initials there. Then she turned the book around for you to sign. Well, she turned the book around for you to sign. She can, the person that's signing it, can copy the real person's name. It's right there in front of them.
Yeah.
And then when the real person come to vote, the people, and this has happened, say, well, you already voted.
Yeah.
My grandson, I tell you the truth, these young kids, I gave him a letter to send off to the electric company. Right here, he told me that, Papa, you addressed the letter to yourself. Right here in the window, it says to the utility company. I wonder what the heck he's looking at. I'm going to have to take him to a doctor. He must have COVID.
You believe
telling me I addressed... I had my name for the return address up there in the left-hand corner. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You got any children?
No, not yet, no.
You know what it is, Lawrence? They watch the Sports Center with Stephen A. Smith and them, and they be arguing and hollering, and that's all it is, back and forth, hollering. And then when you look at these young people and you try to have a conversation, they have a conversation the same way they be doing on those sports centers, sports shows, hooping and hollering. They can't talk under a normal term voice and let you talk, then they talk. But when you talk and they butt in on you four or five times.
Wow.
Now, your thing on white supremacy. White supremacy ain't what y'all... See, white supremacy, if you don't like white supremacy, compete against it. Right.
Okay, but how? Let me ask you this, though.
Like Rihanna did.
How does she
look at Rihanna?
How?
Rihanna came out with her own beauty care product. Now she's a billionaire, worth $1.3 billion. Plus, she was an entertainer, but she went the other route. Dolly Parton. I mean, even though she white, look what she done. She bought in Tennessee that old amusement park and called it Dollyland or something. It's doing a grand. Plus, she's got some beauty products. She's a publisher of records and of songs. So you compete against it. What are you doing, loading your gun up?
No, I'm drinking water. You must be on the blog talk. You're not listening to me on YouTube then, I guess. Okay.
No,
how else do you compete with white supremacy? Is that it? You
whatever they whatever you look to get into, and generally it depends on what it is. The faces behind it is going to be white, so you compete against it. That's all you do. Ain't no average person that's white ain't going to be stopping you from doing anything, and if they do, it's a crime. I mean, whites go out and commit crime. Blacks commit crime. You know, I tell you what, if you're talking about being harmed.
No, but we've been telling you on this channel, though, that when we do go out and do some certain things like this, then the FBI come in and stop us, or somebody else come in from the government and stop us. Just like three rappers came together and they tried to build up a major music distributing company, and they were stopped by the feds. So
yeah, but what did they
example,
what did they do, Henderson?
They tried to build a music conglomerate. What's illegal about
well,
that?
Might have been doing something wrong.
Might have been. So in other words, you don't have no proof. See,
well, you know what
they need to do?
They need to get a lawyer and represent them in the case. The same way you had the gentleman, and I can't think of his name. I can't think of the guy's name that was arguing with one of the cable firms, Cox, I believe, or maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do. Get a lawyer if that's what you think the case is.
Okay. Yeah, I want to ask you. John Lewis talked about becoming a racial equity broker. Is there such thing as a racial equity broker, or what did that mean to you?
He was going to become one.
He said that we should become one, that black folks should become racial equity advocates or what have you.
Here's the thing. You got people like John Lewis and others that think that all blacks are the same.
Yeah.
That is so far from being true. All blacks don't think alike. They don't look alike. They don't eat alike. They don't do a lot of things. They are different. And they are different in education. They are different politically. John Lewis' politics, for some, a lot of blacks, is just not good for them. John Lewis was for open borders. He's against school choice. He was against tariffs that would protect locally produced products and manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So John Lewis was still on that civil rights stuff back in the 1960s, which it was applicable then, but today it's not.
Right.
And see, he's an old Democrat. And you got people today still talking about slavery. Like I heard you talking about 40 acres and a mule. You know why come 40 acres and a mule didn't work? Because
that
was Indian land. How you going to give away, how you going to take away from whites who we say took from the Indians and give to the blacks? That's Indian
so you're
land.
Trying to say that? Well, hold on, but wait a minute. You're saying there was no blacks here in this country before there was some Indians?
Well, now you're going way back. But blacks were—you had black Indians. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, absolutely.
And they were slave owners. They were slave catchers. The Seminole were slave catchers. The Creek was some big slave owners, the Chickasaw and the Choctaw.
Yeah.
When Lincoln done his Emancipation Proclamation, which really did not end slavery in countries that left the Union, he was releasing slaves that had escaped and came over to the Union forces and sought refuge. That's all
absolutely.
He had control over. He had he told his commanders to let them go. That's all he could do. In 1865, with the 13th Amendment, the 13th Amendment did not apply to Indians because Indian tribes were separate nations. They were sovereign. And the Indians told the U.S., if you want us to let our property go, that's what it was. Slaves was property. You're going to have to pay us for it. And that's what they've done. People say that Indians receive reparations. They receive no reparations other than maybe something in a treaty. But in happenstance, when they let those slaves go, and they didn't let all, well, let's put it like this. They let the slaves go, American paid them. I think they paid the Choctaw $300,000 back at that time.
Yeah, and they gave us reservation land as well. What do you mean? They got
Well, see, this is what happened. It's, yeah. Yeah, this is what happened. They really they paid the Choctaw. I think the Choctaw's in Alabama. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they didn't release all of them, but some. And then the Indians became what's called freemen. But they didn't want to become U.S. citizens under the Treaty of Paris. They wanted to remain with the tribes, which for them was a good thing. Now, the Creek, on the Trail of the Tears, the Creek didn't walk with their slaves. They called steamships. And the steamships went up river into the Texas Panhandle. And they took their, quote-unquote, Negro slaves with them. These Creek was black. Creek was black, red, and much, much later on, white. That's what you see a lot today because of the marriage that when they married an Indian woman, then the children, that child was a Creek. So when the Creek went up into Oklahoma, which was Oklahoma territory, it was actually Creek land. Oklahoma didn't come a state until 1907. People talk about Black Wall Street. That was Creek land. There was no black folks' land. Where did black folks at that time get the money to build that?
Hold on. Wait now. Because you could argue that that wasn't black folks' land. But what about in Wilmington, the same thing would happen as well when we had a lot of other Black Wall Streets as well. And the story of Wilmington, where we basically had property and land that would you claim it's not
well,
ours.
That's so, a different story. Wilmington, Wilmington, North Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Was,
I'm
it,
talking about
it wasn't
Oklahoma.
Not, it, but when you say that black people, so you don't think that we should be celebrating Juneteenth as far, I mean, yeah, as far as that, not Juneteenth, what'd you call it, the free of getting Tulsa, after the Tulsa race riot with this property that we basically had, you think that it was wrong to celebrate that?
When you're saying we, you're talking about, see, here's the thing. In Indian society, nobody owns the land. The land is for the tribe. If you was a Creek Indian, a Cherokee, and you wanted land, they would give you land to work. Like in the Creek, I know from what read that you could get land for a couple of years. You wanted 1,000 acres, they give you 1,000 acres to work. Then after the end of the 2 years, you go back to them and, you know, you renew that access to that land. So that's why it's continued. Now, you had the Osage, which is north of Creek. Now, they sold their land. And you know why they sold it? Because they said it was poison soil. You know what was on the soil? It was oil and gas.
Right.
And you had whites come out of Arkansas and bought it for 5 cents an acre. Then they turned around and sold it for what it was worth. That was because of ignorance on the Osage part. But in Oklahoma, what you call Texas, especially East Oklahoma, which is Wagner County, there was a lot of black Creek that owned land there. Because they came up with this allotment system where you, as an Indian, you could get 160 acres. If you had four people in your family, each person got 160 acres, which was equal to 1 square mile. Now, you did have black African Americans come out of Chicago because they was artisans. They had been building and working on buildings in Chicago that was multi-story. So they came over to that area, what you call Green Street, Archer and Greenwood. Actually, it was Archer and North South at that time. And they did work on those buildings. But those people in that area, them blacks in that area, got rich because of the oil and agriculture. They grew agriculture products that they sold to the United States military during World War One, and of course the oil products too. But to say that all those people were Black Americans is just not accurate, because there's no way, I don't know how in the heck Black Americans would have got that kind of money at that time. You're talking about in the early 1900s, and slavery was right over their shoulder. I don't see how they would have done that. I mean, well, technically. Now, what people looking at, these Creek who had black skin, because you had Creek that made it, that bred with African women.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Creek, you had African men that made it with Creek women. Now, that child would have been Creek, because the lineage goes through the mama. But if you had a Creek that made it with a African woman, that child wouldn't have been Creek. It's just the way them societies are set up.
Okay. But you know the story of Wilmington, right? You know the story
of Wilmington. I heard about the Wilmington and that river and so on. What do they call that?
Well, yeah, why, you know, when black folks got chased out of town, right? You know, and like I told you, when we talk about white supremacy on this show, that is a big example. That's the personification of what my show is about, the story of Wilmington, North Carolina. That really is one of the reasons why I name certain types of things white supremacy and stuff like that, because there's even other people talked about when white supremacy took over here and they started in Wilmington, North Carolina. And if you even go down to the library down there in Wilmington, they have a lot of hidden history that they won't even reveal to the public because of what the Democrats at that time was doing. And now, you know, black people were Republicans at that time. You know, they were voting heavily Republican at that time, you know. So, yeah.
You got to look for government-sponsored violence. When you're looking at people sponsored, I'm looking at the federal level. You look at people sponsored violence, then you got to look toward local government and possibly state government, because you ain't gonna find no place where the federal government sponsored violence, and federal government couldn't have came in and done anything anyway. That was up to the local government and the state, because you had people that was committing criminal acts against black folks.
But you don't think that the federal government was behind the bombing of Tulsa?
No.
Okay. I mean,
why would the federal government be? See, here's another thing. Even today, a Creek Indian is not under the authority of Oklahoma. So if you do something wrong, if you run a red light, or if you commit an assault, Oklahoma can't do nothing to you. It's the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the federal government. So if you have something and the police come to you, all you do is pull out your card showing that you are a member of the Creek Nation or any of those other nations. They can't do nothing to you. They don't have no authority.
Right, but how do you apply for that if you have you can prove that you're Indian or Creek native? How do you do that?
Oh, there's ways to do that. A lot of people come off what they call the doll's roll back during that time. And, of course, you know, they still got people that's having babies. They're still propagating in those nations. That's why blacks try to come off the doll's roll to show that we were slaves of the Indians. And therefore, we should deserve benefits from what they're doing now. Now, in 1979, the Creek voted to expel all the blacks. And in 1982, I think another tribe expelled, I think it was the Choctaw, expelled all their blacks. But I think they let some back in. In other tribes, like a Chickasaw, you got to show at least 50% quantum. They call it quantum. Mm-hmm. And if you can show 50% blood, quantum blood, that's part of that tribe, then you have rights in that tribe. But see, a lot of them people dead and gone. A lot of them freedmen died off. The Freedmen Bureau stopped, went out of existence in the early 1900s. And a lot of those freedmen that were slaves to the Indian dead and gone.
No, but that's because the white folks took all the money, though. That's how they really stopped. You know, when you talk, are you talking about when they started the Freedmen Bureau?
Yeah.
They stole the money. A lot of them stole the money.
Well, the Freedmen Bureau was an agency that had, see, the Freedmen Bureau was an agency that worked on behalf of the freemen.
Right.
And like I told you before, a lot of freemen didn't want to become American citizens. They wanted to remain native members of those tribes.
Right, but they were also illiterate and they couldn't read, some of them.
Well, yeah, you had that stuff going on.
Yeah. So, but all right, well, it's good to talk to you, man.
All right, I hope it clears some of this stuff up. All right,
then. Yeah, I hope so. All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right, so back to our program. We got a few minutes, but we wanted to talk with you all about this incident here in Texas. A lot of people have been talking about this in Texas, where this police officer sees a young woman walking, and this happens next. And I wanted to show this before we went off air. Thank you.
Well, here, come talk to me. What's wrong? How come you're crying? And you're barefoot. Where do you live at? What's your address? It's still not a friend. Okay. Hey,
I'm not going to hurt you.
Pulling your daughter away.
I wasn't pulling her away. Was I pulling her away when you
when I tried you to put you loose in the cuffs? Was I pulling her away? I was just testing her to calm her down.
And when I moved you back, you reached out to me.
No,
okay?
You pushed me.
That, I did. I pushed you back. You can't get home on her like that, okay?
All right, so that's,
hey, NBC.
That's what I wanted to talk about on our last shot. I didn't want to have our whole conversation without us going over that incident. And that, and there's another incident. I think this happened. I want to see. Man, it's not Florida. I forget the town that this happened in. It was a Walmart. They were in a Walmart, and you know, these two black women, they were also done like this in that specific city. I think it's somewhere in California. I'm not sure. But that incident that happened in Texas there, that was a sexual assault because he took his he turned off his camera, and all he saw was an 18-year-old girl and told her, hey, come here, come here, and illegally detained her, did not tell her why, you know, he talking about, oh, we had the calls that you were jumping out of cars and stuff. Well, how you, wait a minute now, jumping out of cars, what do you mean talking about jumping out of cars, you know? So this white supremacist, suspected white supremacist, basically cut his camera off. You understand? The camera was not on before the family showed up. The question is why? What happened when the camera was off? Did he get like a hard on as far as, you know, trying to touch this young girl? Because a lot of these, like I told y'all, a lot of these police officers are perverted. Now listen, we told y'all I didn't have that Marley Povich clip, but he announced back in 2020, remember when I was covering the Tarasha Benjamin's case, they said that five black girls went missing in Alabama, in Montgomery. Family, I'm telling you, these race soldiers are behind not only the sexual assaults, but these police officers are behind the sexual human trafficking and abduction of girls. If you tie all that into it, you'll see that's the reason why Screwtube don't let people like us come on. I mean, let's just back up. He basically said, hey, come here, come here, come here. We heard you were jumping out of cars. Come here, come here. Okay, well, who told you I was jumping out of cars? Who called you? You see, he knew that she basically did not know her civil rights. 18-year-old girl crying. She was distressed, wanting to go home. We don't know what was going on, you know, at the house, but we don't know what happened before that. You know, the white supremacists are going to try to say, well, we don't know what happened before. They're going to try to say that. But regardless, the young girl was in distress, right? And he says, hey, come here, come here, come here. And he starts to say, don't go anywhere, don't go anywhere. See, that's how they get vulnerable young people, in a sense of when the cameras is off and you wonder why your damn child going missing. That's because their asses are cutting off their cameras. Or they're basically touching, you know, you and your private parts. And you're like, wait a minute, why you cut the camera off for? You understand? And we see, and like I told you, Nelly Ford told us a long time ago, these are not law enforcement officers. Remember, police officers were only hired and elected to protect white people and white people's property. They wasn't hired to basically to do real policing. You understand? Thumbs up, like, share, subscribe. But I wanted to touch on this story because I thought that this happened in Texas. Texas is crazy. Now that they said that you don't have to have a permit to carry a gun and all that, Texas has got real crazy now. But he turned off his camera. That is a problem. I mean, man, what the hell are you cutting your camera off for? Okay. And the white supremacists, they basically say, well, you know, you got to do what I say. No, you got to tell me what the law I broke. You understand? And then there was other videos that shows other black women getting attacked. You had the Walmart incident, like I said. Then you had, like, some kids being arrested. They were kids. They had like, a gun. The cops knew that it was fake, but they put them all in handcuffs. So you got a lot of stories of white supremacists, these race soldiers who's calling themselves cops, going after soft black targets. You understand? They're trying to make themselves relevant again, you see. And making themselves relative again, they will go after soft targets. Like I told you, in Alabama, Alabama is way more, you know, it's out. They basically, a lot of these police officers in Alabama, oh, see, Screwtube is messing up a channel here. Screwtube is messing up my channel. Hold on. Thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. Notification there. Now, the police officer
we did it again.
We just now learned, excuse me, just 3 months ago, that the police officer who killed our brother Dante Wright had been charged with manslaughter. And we don't know. Well, I'll let the white media.
Hey, man, the police officer who.
I'll let the white media tell you. Hold on. Here's the white media.
Killed Dante Wright is in jail tonight, arrested and charged with second-degree manslaughter. This is Kim Potter wearing an orange jumpsuit now instead of a uniform.
So,
Potter's arrest comes just 3 days after she shot Dante Wright during a traffic stop for expired tags in the Minneapolis suburb of Brooklyn Center.
Now, remember that case? Remember that case? We have not heard anything about that case. You see, we've been caught up into the so-called celebration and about these monuments that they're doing for George Floyd and his family. We forgot about the case of Dante Wright. We forgot about other cases where these race soldiers is just attacking vulnerable black people, young black people. This is an attack on young black folks. And the older generation may not think that this is an issue. The old civil rights generation, they may not think that this is an issue, but it is. Because you don't know. See, the thing about this is that we're thinking that the police are here to protect and serve, but they're not. As I told you earlier, the police is not, there's no law to suggest that they have to help you in certain things. Okay? They're public officials, but they don't have to help you in certain situations. But like I said, going back to that race soldier that stopped that 18-year-old black girl, he was trying to get a hard on. You know, he seen some young girl, he turned off the camera, touching her in all kind of ways. He was sexually assaulting her. That's the only reason why he turned that camera off. That's the only reason why he turned the camera off. You understand? So we look and just imagine a lot of stories, a lot of stories, ladies and gentlemen, that come from that specific incident that we've seen over time. we've seen how these race soldiers, see, like I told you, these are not cops. We have not had a real law enforcement officer for a very long time that has been elected by the people of the community. What we got now is illegal people. They basically get a way to come and become citizens, and they become police officers. Or you got these white supremacists. They come in from other parts of the towns, and they're in your communities and touching on your children. See, this is what we talk about. We don't have real policing in this nation. But I wanted to just talk about that. I wanted for people to, you know, to watch, you know, watch it out for your children, because that kind of, that was really, really off. It didn't make sense that, you know, he put her in handcuffs, then he attacked the mother. Then the other, he called for backup, and that's all they like to do is call for backup. But he didn't call for backup until after the so-called, you know, when he did the sexual, you know, when he caught the camera, that's now when he called for backup. When he could have just simply put the young girl back home and said, oh, okay, everything is going to be okay. Well, you know, are you okay? You know what I'm saying? There was no kind of, you know, situation to de-escalate the situation. He basically, see, these race soldiers, they go looking for trouble. You understand? That's what we talk about. You know, like I said, my twin sister say, man, you go looking for trouble. Well, if we don't go looking for trouble, trouble is going to find us regardless. I don't care how, you know, good the truth basically is in America. Trouble is going to find you, because the system that we stay in, it requires you to have trouble constantly. It requires you not to have a peaceful society. White supremacists like for there to be good trouble. Their good trouble is to making sure that they attack you, use their system, use the white supremacist code that they all are part of, and the whole system that helps them. That's the reason why every time this caller we've been talking to, they call my show, I've been trying to educate him on the fact that it doesn't matter how you work with these white supremacists, you have to then watch your back, because they're going to find a way to stop you from growing. Or even, you know, like I said, oh, I forgot to even show y'all the brother, remember, they planted some weed or something in his car, these two race soldiers who stopped him. They planted weed in the brother's car, and the charges was later dropped, of course, but this is how they used to get black people. See, now cameras are showing up everywhere. Everybody got a camera. The cell phones that we are using, the cameras are rolling now. But see, like I said, this race soldier, he took his camera and he cut it off. You know what I'm saying? He got a little hard on with this 18-year-old girl. You understand? But we have to basically remember Dante Wright's situation. We can't let this woman get off. Okay? Now, lastly, we're going to also talk about another incident. See, let me just tell you, we basically got a problem with these white supremacists being police officers in our neighborhood. You understand? The problem is that our children ends up dead when they encounter the police. But white kids have all kinds of guns, assault weapons, and all of this, and they basically survive. You understand? That was, now, a Los Angeles police officer, a deputy involved, was engaged in a shooting of a teenager. See, here we go again. These people is now training these Hispanics now, or these, you know, who is becoming police officers, to do the same thing. See, we've been telling you in the black media how the struggle to fight white supremacy can not only just be the ideal that we're going to challenge them economically, we have to recognize that we have to start policing ourselves. And the reason why we have not been able to start the discussion is because we have black people out here with this civil rights bullcrap. You understand? Talking about voting rights suppressions and stuff while the youngsters are out here facing bullets. I thought that this thumbs up, like, share, and subscribe. Video shows Los Angeles sheriff's deputies fatally shooting David Ordaz Jr., 34, after his sister reportedly called authorities saying Ordaz was suicidal, holding a knife and high methamphetamine. And NBCA Digital Collection innovating powerful news brand, which is basically showing it. See, the thing about this is that when your families and your relatives start calling the police, talking about they can't control you, they're talking about you're suicidal, you understand? Come on now. Your relatives, see, everybody thinks that most of their relatives or all of their relatives got their head on straight. But when your family start calling the police, talking about you're out of control, they don't know what to do with you. Wait a minute, mom and dad, you was the one that raised this child. Why do the police need to come to help you with your child? Why do your sister and brother have to call the police because you've taken this medicine that is throwing off your mentality? Excuse me. See, we have to talk about this conversation. So that is now what they're talking about now in the white media. Body cam captures fatal Los Angeles deputy involved shooting. So we'll talk more about that this week on the Lawyer Henderson podcast show. But I wanted to just show y'all that video. That video was very disturbing. And we basically need to start to learn to police ourselves as black people. Learn to police ourselves. We don't have to call the police every day or every time something happens. Why are we calling the police all the time? We understand why white people call the police, but why are we calling the police? You understand? When we cannot, why are we calling the police? You know, we have to ask those questions. When we as black men and women can police ourselves, you understand? We have to be the change that we want to see. Because John Lewis talking about good trouble, that's not going to help us. Sheila Jackson Lee getting arrested, that's not going to help us. You know, talking about Voting Rights Act and then bringing illegals in to, you know what I'm saying, to go and control districts and jurisdictions, that's not going to do nothing. All that's going to keep us is they're going to keep us in a segmented position so that we can stay in the same state that we're in. I often talked about in some of the commentary that we did on the Capitol insurrection. Remember when all these white supremacists went to the Capitol and they stormed in their Capitol and they tried to justify storming into the Capitol to start this insurrection? During the Trump administration, they said that based upon the fact that they were basically exercising their rights. You understand? But I don't know what their right is besides white supremacy. I often try to ask these white supremacists like Ben Shapiro and all these Tucker Carlson that comes on Fox News, and who talks about their rights or their freedom as they know it. If you know, white men are being, is in trouble in this country, or after Derek Chauvin did this to George Floyd, it would never be the same. You hear the white supremacists talk that. And as I asked you earlier, what was he talking about? See, they knew that this white privilege that they were basically engaging in was one of their fundamental rights as they see it, which is not supposed to be on their rights. It's supposed to be also black people's rights. And that's where me and the caller disagree. When we talked there about the black people getting equal rights because of slavery, which was a federal law, by the way, to enslave people, black folks. That's the reason why reparations are necessary. Okay? So when it comes to fighting global white supremacy, that to me is good trouble. That to me is good trouble. When it comes to fighting these race soldiers that the community did not elect, that's good trouble. That's good trouble. Now, getting our asses whooped by these white supremacist race soldiers, that's not the type of good trouble that the youth, the black youth, the millennial youth, and Gen X and all these other youngsters are talking about. They're there to make sure that there is a right to defend yourself by any means necessary. That's the good trouble we basically need. As we were talking about Wilmington, North Carolina, remember the white supremacists during that time, remember they basically chased black folks out, and black people had to hid in swamps. They had to hid in the river. They had to hid in places because the town said that those black people, they better get out of town by sundown. And then they burnt down that black man who, he had his newspaper. And the white women, remember the white women of that time who was saying and accusing black men of sexual harassment, he wrote in the newspaper that some white women who like black women, black men of that, he wrote that. And that would basically help to also fuel and infuriate these white supremacists. So he was just given an editorial opinion about some white women basically who wanted to be in a relationship with black men at that time. Okay? And so there was another situation, there was another point as to how the white supremacists used that as a way to firebomb all of the businesses that we had. How then that anybody can say that we do not deserve reparations? You see, and what we're talking about is going to fix that. Violations, definitions, and constitutional principles.